This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
You used to run an agent named Bishop.
Tom Bishop.
Yeah, how is he?
A week ago, Tom Bishop disappeared in Hong Kong. He's been arrested for espionage. Fill in a few holes for us.
Where'd you learn to shoot?
Boy Scout, sir. Central Intelligence.
Train you as an agent. You'd be working for me, mostly undercover.
Through these fields of destruction.
Hello, everyone. This is Popcorn Culture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me, Sharmila Ganesan. And calling in from home is Arvind Yuvaraj. And today... Well, actually, this is a big week. Just to let you know, we have a big review coming up. The first, I think, big movie review that we've had
since whenever all of this started, since March, I would say. Yeah,
pretty much. So essentially, tomorrow we're going to be reviewing Tenet. And then on Thursday, we're going to be doing a Christopher Nolan supercut ahead of, I think, a weekend where a lot of people might be heading back to the cinema. But today is Throwback Tuesday. And as you might have guessed from that clip, we are going to be talking about a film from 2001, and that is Spy Game.
I was new to Spy Game. I remember it being a really big deal when it came out, primarily because it brought together Brad Pitt and Robert Redford. And, you know, Brad Pitt was always described as the new Robert Redford, both for looks and charisma. And so everyone was really excited when this movie came out. It was directed by Tony Scott. But I never watched it at that time. So I was totally new to this. And I must say, it's a throwback in that really good sense. It's not a movie I can really see being made today, but it's also a movie that's kind of just great to revisit on a weekend where you want a bit of those early 2000 vibes.
Did people actually call Brad Pitt like the new Robert Redford? Like, was that a thing?
Yeah. I mean, he even looks like him, right? He practically looks like his son.
Because I was going to say, like, when watching the film, I thought, like, you know, the people who made the film, Tony Scott and his gang, might have gone, like, let's get Brad Pitt for the leading role. And then let's get like an older Brad Pitt for the other role, which is Robert Redford. And that's what I kept thinking watching the movie.
This shows which generation you're from that you refer to Redford as the older Brad Pitt.
Yeah, so that's the benchmark, right?
Yeah.
Because they have the same kind of charisma. They have the same hair. You could swap them around and they would play each other's roles equally well. There's so much, there's too much of that sort of like calm and collected persona in one film.
Huh. I agree that they are very similar in that. And this is something, again, that's always been said, right? Like Robert Redford and Brad Pitt are, the older and younger version of each other. And you really see that in terms of the swagger. And as we keep saying, they look the same, which I think actually plays to the movie's benefit. I don't think there's too much. I quite like having this much star power in a movie like this. And it's kind of, especially because it's a movie that, while it has a fair amount of action, is really kind of that nice mix between, you know, putting forth an intellectual argument about what it means to be a spy and, you know, what it means to give up your life for this, while also having a fair amount of explosions. But the story itself is really about Robert Redford being Nathan... I struggle with the surname a lot.
Muir.
Yes. Like Muir Woods, yeah. So Nathan Muir, who's retiring from the CIA at the exact same point at which a protege of his, an estranged protege played by Brad Pitt, gets into trouble. And all this is set against the backdrop of US and China trying to negotiate a trade deal.
Mm.
Yeah.
And lots of espionage stuff, especially in the parts where there's some great sequences of Robert Redford training Brad Pitt into the game of being a spy. You know, there's just, I think, everything that you would expect from a great spy film. It hits all those markers. But I will say, though, it surprised me for the fact that surprisingly little action.
Yeah.
A lot of just men in offices, you know, running between floors, rifling through offices and papers and faxing things versus actual running around and and spying, if I may say.
Lots of flashback sequences, lots of stuff that happened around stacks of papers and boxes and desks.
Folders.
Folders, which surprised me as well, because I didn't... Normally, when you watch like a Tony Scott film, it takes place outside. There's a lot of outdoor shots. It's never this... There are not as many people sitting down. And this had a lot of people just sitting down and a lot of dialogue. And I love the dialogue. And I also love the energy. I mean, it's you mentioned the training montage where they were training each other. I mean, Robert Redford was training Brad Pitt. And I was like, I've never seen two people more cool and calm about being in like a desert or war.
Dodging bombs, gunshots. Just like, hey, coffee.
Yeah, coffee. He's like, hey, you want to join me? And he's like, yeah, I'm going to join you. And they're all like soft-spoken. And I'm like, wow. I'm like, wow, there is like no blood pressure in this scene at all.
You know what I love? I love all the scenes set in the CIA offices. I just love the fact that the offices look like offices. They don't look like, you know, the kind of thing that I suppose in some ways you're used to seeing in movies about spying, about intelligence, or even about war, where you have these like giant walls of charts, you know, the kind that you can imagine Tony Stark kind of manipulating with his hands. It's really not like that. It's like you said, it's very pen and paper. Everybody dresses in some version of beige or brown. and it's just got that very, we're just people in an office doing a job. And all that set against the sort of internal maneuverings that Nathan Muir is trying to engineer, I suppose, within the office in order to save Tom Bishop, his, we keep calling them Brad Pitt, but, you know, Tom Bishop. And I loved the fact that there was so much happening in the office itself. And I think that, again, goes back to what we were saying about the charisma of its stars, the fact that they make those scenes very watchable.
And I also think that actually it is a story of a passing of a torch. It's a story of the divide between two generations. It's a story of a mentor, you know, and a father-son in many ways, even if they're not actually father and son, that relationship of training someone and then them disappointing you in some way. So there's a lot of that happening. And I think that that split of location actually defines that as well, because Robert Redford is the man that has kind of aged out of being the field agent.
Yeah.
And so he's in the office and he's near retirement versus Brad Pitt, who's very much still in the field. And he does all of the, you know, he does all of the action sequences. He does all of the, but he also makes what to us seems like the brash decisions and the being led by the heart rather than the head. So there's a lot of that going on. And I think it's very clever because it's easy to dismiss Tony Scott's films as being much more focused on maybe not the subtext so much, but like, but in this film, that's actually to the benefit in the sense there is an underlying story that you can pick up on. There's a lot of mood and emotion, but the film also just coasts on the stars. And I think that's really kind of cool. That's why I called it an early 2000 film. It's a kind of film that you don't see a lot of anymore.
It's also interesting that you said earlier that you can't see this movie being made today, because when I was watching it, I thought this could definitely be made today. Some of the stuff that pops up is so timely that I was like, you wouldn't be able to tell if it's like an early 2000s film.
Oh, like story-wise, yeah, for
story-wise,
sure.
Yeah. Like the US-China tensions, and there's a couple of other political things that pop up. And I was like, whoa, so this is... So I don't know what it says about how long these things have been going on, that movies can be made in 2001 and in 2020 and still have the same themes, or if these things just repeat themselves. But I was like, if they remade this movie today, it would definitely be able to work again. Maybe this time with like Brad Pitt in Robert Redford's spot.
That would be kind of cool, wouldn't it? Although I can't think of a new Brad Pitt for the old Brad Pitt.
I mean, he still looks like a young Brad Pitt.
They'll just CGI him and then there'll be two Brad Pitts.
Yeah. I mean, they did it already in Benjamin Button, yeah. So we know it can be done. Okay, so we're talking today about Spy Game, which was a 2001 spy film directed by Tony Scott. And if you've seen it, if you've enjoyed it, if you want to weigh in on Arvin calling Robert Redford, what was it?
The older Brad Pitt.
The older Brad Pitt.
You can let us know. That number to WhatsApp is 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be right back. This is Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
Don't ever question me again. ever.
What?
I give you an order, you take it. You don't ask why. Those 10 seconds on the phone could have blown the op.
The op was bringing Schmidt across.
The op was setting up Ann Cathcart, and your end had to look legit.
What are you telling me? Schmidt was bait?
Yes. He went to the Russians a week ago and said he had a contact, an American, somebody he could use.
Don't tell me that! Don't tell me that! You didn't look in his eyes! Don't tell me that!
He was your asset, somebody you used for information.
You don't just trade these people like they're baseball cards. It's not a f***ing game.
Oh, yes, it is. It's exactly what it is. And it's no kid's game either. This is a whole other game. And it's serious, and it's dangerous, and it's not one you want to lose.
Hello, everyone. This is Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvin. And together we're talking about or throwing back to Spy Game. And I think the first part of our discussion really focused on the performances, because, of course, it is a very star-driven thing. I just wanted to touch on one more thing before we move on to direction, and that is Stephen Delane. Because
oh, yes. Thank you for bringing it up. Because I spent like a good half of the movie going, where do I know him from? And then I was like, Game of Thrones.
Yes. Who else looks this cranky all the time?
Just in a suit, not in armor. But yeah, same.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on Stephen Delane because he plays a... I guess, antagonistic role within
the
CIA.
He's the stereotypical suit, right?
Yeah.
The one that wants to... I mean, he's not even actually a bad guy because... And that's actually what I like about the film. Nobody's being particularly moral. They're all doing things that are actually pretty sleazy. But you're clearly supposed to be okay with the stuff that Robert Redford's character does, Nathan, versus someone like Stephen Delane. And I think that's kind of interesting.
No, and I think you need that guy with that sort of cranky face to pull off that role. And I'm not saying that like in an offensive way, but you need that sort of the suit, the quote unquote suit, mm-hmm. to do these things. Because I don't think I've seen an action movie with that many scenes of people walking down bridges between two blocks or walking from one department to another department with tense music in the background. It's basically just him following Robert Redford around and trailing him to see where he's going and what he's doing. But it's all a bunch of scenes of swiping access cards and then going into the next block and turning a corner and just like a cat and mouse chase, which is not actually a cat and mouse chase. It's a very slow walk between two people, but it is still very tense. And I know that it sounds like I'm making fun of a movie. I'm not. It's just, it's not many people can have scenes like that then also have you hooked wondering like what is going to happen next, and is he going to catch him looking at some folder, or is he going to catch him red-handed doing something that he's not supposed to be doing, which I love.
And I think that speaks to the direction, right? Because this is a very, I think it's a very Tony Scott movie. So if you've seen Tony Scott films, they are very, what was the word you used earlier, Sharmila? Not necessarily about the subtext.
Yeah.
And I think that describes it pretty well. They're quite in your face. They're very, they're kinetic, but not in the Guy Ritchie kinetic kind of way. You know, they do move quickly. They're sort of old-fashioned swipes. And, you know, it looks very much, if you had to kind of carbon date this movie, I think most people would be able to get it within 1 or 2 years. You would know that this is a product of the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm. No, and I think there is a joy to watching movies like that. You know, the best I can imagine this as, this is a film that is a product of a time when you went to the cinemas regularly. You didn't need to be sold on why you want to watch a film in the cinema. And that you would watch movies like this in the cinema, not necessarily wait for it to come on, you know, your streaming service or whatever, right? And it speaks to a time when, again, the fact that for all that it's a spy film, it doesn't actually rely on action sequences and it relies more on dialogue and witty sort of phrases and interactions between people, again, is something that speaks to a time when the lines between action and drama were not really as strict as they are now.
And also, watching it, I was not sure who inspired who in the action sort of like universe between like countries and stuff, because there are a lot of sped up sequences, a lot of sped up scenes, and unprovoked drone shots that come out of nowhere when they're like standing on rooftops and stuff. And it reminded me of like Asian cinema. So you see a lot of those shots in like Tamil movies, Hindi movies, lots of 90s Chinese action movies.
Hong Kong movies, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. they have these sudden like boom, bam, you know, there's a drone shot out of nowhere. And there's like, all of a sudden you see like the sequence being like sped up 10 times. You have no idea why. They're like black and white freeze frames. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, NCIS out of the blue, like unprovoked, right? So it got me thinking like, who inspired who in the first place? Does Tony Scott watch a lot of Asian cinema, or was it Asian cinema that followed Tony Scott? Because it doesn't feel like your typical Hollywood action film. I know Michael Bay and stuff, he has his tropes, but his tropes are not these tropes. These are very, very signature Asian cinema tropes.
Yeah, again, I think that it is about that period in time where there was beginning, there was a recognition of the action chops of Asian mm-hmm. cinema and that looking across the, I was going to say the pond, but really it's looking across
the ocean,
the continents, and drawing all those different influences. I think the other thing that I really appreciated about the movie in a somewhat similar vein, I think, is that it questions a little bit America's role as the big brother of the world. Mm. And that's something that I like, because I think in movies about the CIA, about the FBI, about all these agencies, it's very easy to get lost in the, they're America's heroes, you know, kind of narrative. And this really has that questioning, even within that father-son, protege-mentor relationship of, is this really the right path? Are we doing the right thing? And sure, you could argue it doesn't explore that in very deep ways, but I think it's enough. It's enough to put a little grit into an otherwise, like, you know, smooth machine.
I would actually argue that it does it more than just a little bit. For me, it seemed quite evident that the movie's place was actually in placing a lot of these choices as being very heavy-handed and looking out only for American interests. And even someone like Nathan's character, he's only being driven to sort of fight against this system because he has a personal connection to Tony Bishop. Tom Bishop, yes. Tom Bishop, otherwise, he was actually perfectly fine with being a part of this entire process for the whole of his career, right? Basically using intelligence to sway the hand of various governments around the world. And I think that that's actually a surprisingly complex undertone for a movie like this. Again, I don't mean that as a criticism, because it's a great watch. It you know, the hours flew by while I was watching it. It's just good that there's more to it than just that.
And it is also kind of funny, the movie. It has a bit of comedy, which I did not expect. It's also kind of insane how inept everyone else in the intelligence unit is, because there's been stuff happening like under their nose for so long. And it is kind of funny seeing them try to figure out what is happening. Robert Redford gets like these phone calls, these secret phone calls that he tries to cover up, which they have no idea what is going on. So I didn't expect that element to be in this, because normally, again, Tony Scott's movies are very action driven. Not a lot of comedy. And this had comedy in the dialogue, which is nice.
It makes you think of how much technology has changed so much of this, right? Because one reason why this movie couldn't be made today is the prevalence of digital technology and the internet and smartphones. This plot just wouldn't happen.
I'll just say that a lot hinges on a fax going through.
Yes, absolutely.
and if you just think about that, let's all feel a moment of nostalgia for the early 2000s, because I don't see that being a plot point today. All right, so we've been talking today about Spy Game and how it kind of tells the story of intelligence in a way that combines action, I think enough thoughtful dialogue and enough personal relationships to kind of be an interesting addition to the whole spy genre. If you would like to weigh in and tell us if you've seen this movie recently or if you plan to, you can WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, or write to us at movies@bfm.my. You can also find us, we are BFM Popcorn, on both Twitter and Instagram. This is Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.